Chapter 10 The Hunters Hunted. They had taken her. They had defiled Blackened with the foul mortal scent of panicked fear. They had torn Septimus to pieces, and they had taken Eurydice. Talos sheathed his blade and locked his bolter to his thigh, kneeling by the command throne where Septimus lay unmoving. Dark smears of blood across the floor showed where the slave had dragged himself. He lounged in the pilot's throne, sprawled like a puppet with cut strings, a mess of bloody bruises, broken limbs, and shattered bones. He still breathed. Talos wasn't sure how. The Night Lord kicked a convict's corpse aside, removing his helm and kneeling by his artificer. The rich scent of flowing blood and the reeking stink of recent death assailed his naked senses. Septimus coughed flecks of fresh blood to his sliced lips, turning to face the Astartes.
"They took her,"
he said, his voice surprisingly clear.
"Master, I'm sorry. I can't see. They took her."
Talos withdrew a syringe and a roll of self-adhesive sinskin bandage weave from his thigh-mounted Narthesium. The supplies he bore now were a hollow shadow of the old apothecary tools he'd once carried. But those were lost an age ago, on a nameless world in the years after the great heresy split the galaxy. The first thing he did was inject a cocktail of blood coagulant, painkillers, and Astartes plasma into Septimus's thigh. The second was to bandage what remained of his slave's face.
"They took her,"
Septimus said again, as the weave was wrapped around his eyes.
"I know."
Talos rose to his feet again, after spraying disinfectant on the open wounds of the mortal's legs, torso, and arms. He tied off the worst gashes with tourniquets and left the bandages within Septimus's reach on the control console.
"You must use the rest yourself. The bandages are by the secondary thrust levers."
"Yes, master."
"They used explosives to breach the main ramp doorway."
It was not a question.
"Yes, master."
"Understood. Rest, Septimus."
"I can't see,"
the slave repeated. His voice was still strong, but his head lulled with the onset of both shock and the effects of the syringe's contents hitting his organs.
"They took my eyes."
"They took one of them. The other is damaged, but not lost."
Talos was searching the corpses, each one felled by las rounds or vicious hacks of Septimus's feral world cleaver. The two serfs had fought like tigers before being overwhelmed. The evidence of their defiance was all around, mutilated and silent in death.
"If I can't see,"
Septimus rested his head against the rest of his throne,
"I can't fly us back to the Covenant."
"That is not important at the moment. Do you know what happened to First Claw?"
The slave swallowed, the sound thick and wet.
"Back in orbit, a Black Legion Thunderhawk."
Talos breathed out through clenched teeth, an unsubtle trap that nevertheless they had all walked right into.
"Be silent," he said to Septimus. "Do not move."
"Are you going for her?"
"I said to be silent."
"Hunt well, master."
"Always."
Talos, Astartes of First Claw, 10th Company, 8th Legion, stalked towards the cockpit doors. He gripped his stolen power blade in one hand, and with the other he replaced his helmet, blanketing his sight in the murder red of his targeting vision. Over his shoulder, the inhuman warrior spoke four words to his wounded slave, the promise emerging from the skull helm as a mechanical snarl.
"Back in a minute."
It had been a long time since the hunter had moved with such purpose. Too long, he realized. He had lost grip of his own purity, ignored the simple power brought about from being true to one's nature. He found the instincts flared into life as soon as his twin heart started beating faster. He ran, the boots of his ceramite second skin pounding on the metal decking. The sound was a welcome warning, a tribal war drum, the threatening heartbeat of an enraged god. The hunter would take no pains to mask his approach, let the enemy know that death was coming for them. He moved through the prison complex, corridor by corridor, not trusting the lift to deliver him, placing his faith in the strength of his own renewed vigor. It dawned on him as he sprinted that in the hours since his poisoning and the awakening from his magus-induced vision, a thick sluggishness had settled into his bones. This weakness faded now, purged in the flow of honest adrenaline. Eurydice. Curse them for taking her, and curse the Black Legion for engineering this petty little trap. She was to be the Covenant's navigator. Talos would stand for nothing else, not after seeing so clearly in his vision how she would be discovered on the surface of Nostromo's remnants. Lower and lower into the complex, he ran with unrestrained pleasure at the battle stimulants tingling through his blood. His warplate's machine spirit wanted this hunt. Its dim sentience was alive, and sharing his joy, they both needed this. In the corner of his visor, a rune burned its way into his sight. The Nostraman numeral 8. It pulsed with a heartbeat of its own, listing life signs and distance from his position in urgent red lettering. The surgery that blocked Eurydice's warp eye with a small iron plate was not the only modification the Legion's servitors had made to the navigator. Implanted in her throat was a locator beacon, ticking its position to any Night Lords tuned to its frequency. A standard implantation for the slaves of the 8th Legion. It took exactly 6 minutes and 31 seconds to reach the basement generatorium chambers. Almost 7 minutes of running through stilled, lifeless corridors, past empty cells, and an equal number of hallways, still dense with the sweating mortal flesh of convicts waiting to be loaded into slave ships. Some of them had reached out to him, mistaking him for one of their Black Legion's saviors. The hunter answered their worship with swings of his blade as he ran, not allowing himself to slow down, even to end their irritating blasphemies. Angry, scared cries followed in his wake, each time the sword sang. These grunts and bestial shouts of animals herded for the slaughter, panicked by a larger predator, almost brought a grin to his lips. The hunter tried not to smile, though their very existences amused him. So weak, so scared. 6 minutes and 31 seconds after he had left the Thunderhawk on the landing platform, Talos reached the basement. Able to survive the drop, he'd fallen the final 3 floors by tearing open a sealed elevator chute door and leaping into the darkness. He landed with an echoing thud that rang out throughout the prelim chambers of the generatorium floors. Wasting no time, Talos resumed his sprint, running headlong through the empty control room. Great windows took up one wall, facing out into a vast domed cavern, housing the grinding, clanking generators powering the sprawling prison complex above. Each of the 20 generators stood 5 stories tall, edifices of hammering pistons, whirring cogs, and thrumming power cell units wedged into their sides, like the scales of some caged reptilian beast. Between this miniature city, walkways and gangways were illuminated by the flashing red of emergency lighting. His vision wavered, rippling lines of distortion dancing across his lens displays, runes warped and cancelled. Electrical distortion, a great deal of it. It was killing his helm's input receptors. So much power. Talos scanned the control room, large enough for a staff of 30 or more, though devoid now of all life. Void shields? This much power couldn't be purely for lighting the multi-towered spire above. These generators must also power the prison's void shields, preventing orbital bombardment or meteor strike. Defending a fortress full of criminals from death, though they were slated for execution anyway... Ah, the wasteful ignorance of the Imperium of Man. Anathema boomed out a volley of bolt shells that hammered in a wide spread across the controlled consoles before him. His vision cleared. Darkness fell. Silence at last followed. It was not an immediate process. At first, the darkness was broken by the crackling death rattles of the destroyed consoles, lighting the blackness like bolts of lightning. When the ruined control consoles spat their last, his vision stabilized just as darkness fell. True, absolute darkness, imaginable only by those who lived life without ever seeing the sun. Next came the silence. The 20 generator towers took almost a minute to die. Great hulks, strangled of attention and starved of willpower without the guiding signal of the control consoles. Within the observation room, failsafe systems roared into life with flashing red sirens. Talos emptied the rest of his magazine into the failsafe station, turning his head from the resulting explosion. Once more, there was darkness. The generator towers rattled and clanked and whined down into stillness over the course of another 46 seconds. And then, blessedly, there was silence over the self-contained Generatorium City. Talos crashed through the control room windows, falling 20 meters, landing smoothly on the ground floor's decking with a tremendous bang of ceramite on iron. He looked into the darkness, listened to the silence, and breathed a single word. Praesite. Indriga wasn't spooked. He was, however, losing his temper. The others were getting twitchy with the lights going out and the generator towers dying. The girl wasn't struggling anymore, but that was hardly any reassurance. She'd already bitten and clawed chunks out of Edsan and Mirik, and Indriga had a feeling lurking at the back of his mind that the dangerous bitch was just waiting for the right moment to lash out again. Between two powering down towers, the four men froze in the darkness. The crash of destroyed glass had reached them even over the tower's death whines. Handheld lampsticks speared into life as Indriga and Edson turned on the shotgun-mounted lights they'd taken from slain prison guards. The girl moaned, coughing loud enough to make Indriga jump.
"Shut her up," he whispered, "and keep your damn light on the ground."
Edson obeyed, lowering his stolen gun so the beam was no longer lancing off into the avenues between the towers.
"You just mess your pants, Indri. I saw you jump like you were shot."
It wasn't mockery in Edson's voice. It was something not far from panic.
"I ain't spooked," Indriga whispered back. "Just lower your throne, damned voice."
Edson didn't reply at first. Indriga sure looked spooked, and that meant bad things. Indri was a hive ganger, like most of them, but his skin was black with tats, listing his kill counts and blasphemous beliefs. You didn't get that big without being vat-grown, or significantly cut up and put back together by some augmetic hungry doc, that's for sure. When his nerves got the better of him, he said,
"Indri, there's four of us, right? That's good. Yeah? Yeah."
Edson had the distinct feeling Indriga wasn't listening to him at all. That was nothing new. Indriga was big news in our sector. He'd never had time for small-time players like Edson. But this time, it wasn't like Indriga was brushing him off out of disrespect. This time, Indri just looked like he could smell fire around the corner and was thinking about making a run for it. It was weird. Looking at him now, he was like one of the beefy attack dogs Edson's boss used to use in pit fights. Gene changed to be hulks of slab-like muscle and wide jaws, and before a dog fight they'd be tense and shivering, staring off at stuff only they could see. They were glanding stims, sure, but it was still weird to see an animal so focused. Indriga looked like that now. Shivering but rigid, staring at... well, that was the problem. Like those ugly dog things, he was staring at the Emperor only knew what.
"You see something?" Edson whispered.
"No. Can hear it, though."
And then, just like that, Edson heard it too. Maybe the girl did too, because she moaned again, earning a slap from Myrick, who was still bleeding, still back there with her. A new noise blended with the fading howl of the generators, something rhythmic, like the metal thunk, thunk, thunk of something. Edson didn't even know what it sounded like. He'd never heard it before. His slippery mind fixed on the only comparison it could hold on to in his rising panic. Like the footsteps of a giant. When he would learn the truth of the matter less than a minute later, he'd be horrified to see how accurate he'd been. Endriga raised his shotgun.
Someone's coming.
For her?
Edson swallowed. Endriga's slow caution was shredding his nerves. This was bad. Maybe they could leave the girl and get out of here.
Indri, are they coming for her?
Eurydice spoke for the first time since she'd been taken. Through swollen lips, she sneered the words.
No, he's coming for you.
Of the Emperor's sons, one had always stood apart from his brothers. Through a twist of fate that would herald the human race's eventual unmaking, the 20 progeny of the Emperor were stolen from their father. As vat-grown infants, who had been painstakingly flesh-forged as biological masterpieces in the labyrinthine gene labs beneath the surface of Terra, they were engineered to be all that was idyllic and noble in the human form. Avatars, as it were, of mankind's perfection. Their exaltations and degenerations are chronicled in numerous tomes of mythology and factual record, variously forgotten by most mortals of the Imperium in the 10,000-year span, sequestered by the Inquisition or so distorted by the passage of time as to barely resemble the truth. Though all 20 sons would one day be reunited with their sire, as the Emperor reached out to conquer the stars in his great crusade, 19 of these sons were raised, for better or worse, by surrogate mentors. Their incubation pods plunged from the skies of 20 worlds, and 20 planets played home and paid homage to godlike beings that would rise to shape the destiny of each world as they grew to adulthood. On Chemos, a world of manufactories and pollution so thick it blanketed the sky in a drape of vile orange mist, the Primarch Fulgrim rose through the ranks of drone workers and executives to become the lord of the fortress factories, heralding in a new age of resource and prosperity for his people. On Caliban, the austere Primarch known as the Lion grew to lead a glorious crusade of knightly orders against the tainted beasts of his home world's forests. On Fenris, legends have the Primarch Leman Russ first raised by the vicious wolves of that icy world, then reaching his majority to lead the barbarous warrior clans as their greatest High King. On a nameless world, its title long lost to the mists of time, the Primarch Angron reached adulthood as a pit slave, shackled by the lords of his apparently civilized planet, forever twisted by the experiences of his bloodthirsty maturation. For better or worse, fate had each imperial son raised by others, shaped by instructors, guides, mentors, friends, and enemies. Only one Primarch grew up alone, hidden from the eyes of humanity, guided by no hand and taught by no elder. He would come in time to be known by the name his father had chosen for him, Conrad Kurz. To the people of Nostromo, the world forever wrapped in Nightfall's embrace, he was, at least at first, altogether less human. Never did the Primarch bear a human name there. The child survived by living feral in the shadows of humanity's towers. He scavenged in the alleys and streets of Nostromo Quintus, the planetary capital, a sprawling metropolis that covered a sizable portion of the northern hemisphere. Crime here, as it was across all Nostromo, was as rife as life itself. With no moral compass beyond the evidence of his own eyes, the young Primarch began the work that would shape his existence. The seed of his endeavor was humble enough at first, at least by the standards of imperial justice. Street-level criminals, the murderers, the rapists, the thugs, gangers and muggers that populated the dark avenues of Nostromo Quintus soon began to whisper a name that flowed from their lips with fearful tremors. The Night Haunter. He would kill them. Barely into his teens, the boy would witness an act of violence or crime, and he would leap from the shadows, feral and enraged, butchering those who preyed upon their fellow humans. This was how the nascent core of his humanity sought to enforce order upon his surroundings. Fear, primal and true, was something the young god understood all too well. He saw its uses and applications, and he saw how those in the thrall of terror were so much more pliant and obedient. In those black streets, he learned the lesson that would shape his legion. Humanity did not need kindness, indulgence, or trust in order to progress. People did not comply with law and live lives of order out of altruism or shared ideology. They obeyed society's tenets because they were afraid. To break the law invited justice. Within justice was punishment. He became that punishment. He became the threat of justice. Known criminals were left for all to see come the weak dawn. Crucified and disemboweled, chained to the walls of public buildings and the ornate doors of the wealthiest gang leaders and syndicate bosses. Always, he would leave their faces untouched, twisted with the silent and fixed scream of an agonizing death. For he knew the dead gazes of the slain triggered a deeper empathy and realization within the hearts of those who met their glazed stares. Years passed, and many more died. Soon enough, the Night Haunter was reaching his pale, grasping hands into the higher tiers of society, beating, strangling, and slaughtering the ringleaders, the organizers, the officials at the core of the city's corruption. The fear that so thickly saturated the streets soon choked the halls of the wealthy and powerful. The rule of law reigned. Victory and compliance through the threat of punishment. Order through fear. It is said in the records of the Eighth Legion that when the Emperor came to Nostromo, he spoke these words to his long-lost son. Conrad Kurz, be at peace. For I have arrived and intend to take you home. The Primarch's reply is also recorded. That is not my name, Father. I am Night Haunter. Perhaps the sons of Conrad Kurz, had their sire been raised upon another world and learned different lessons, would have been more typical Astartes, and the Eighth Legion a far cry from the driven creatures they were at the edge of the 41st millennium. But the sons of the Night Haunter learned every lesson their gene father did, carrying the same truths with them down the centuries.
Soul Hunter, the Primarch had once said to Talos. My lord, he had answered, unable as ever to meet his father's direct gaze.
He concentrated on the Night Haunter's midnight warplate, decorated by lightning bolts painted by the finest tech artisans of Mars, and bearing the skulls of so many fallen foes on chains like hanging fruit.
Soon, Soul Hunter.
The melancholic tone of his lord's voice was not new. The whispered reverence was. Surprise made Talos raise his eyes to his father's face. Gaunt and nearly lipless, the pale, dull grey of sunrise on a dead world.
Lord, soon we run from the hounds my father set at our heels, and vindication must be bought with blood. Vindication is always bought with blood, Lord. This time the blood price will be mine to pay, and willingly, my son, Death is nothing compared to vindication. Die with the truth on your lips, and your life's echo will never fade.
His father spoke on, but Talos heard none of it. The words were like a blade of cold fire in his gut.
You will die, he breathed. I knew this would come, my lord. Because you have seen it, the Primarch grinned.
As always, the smile was without any mirth. The Night Haunter had never, to Talos's knowledge, displayed any human emotion approaching genuine humor. He was amused by nothing. He enjoyed nothing. Even the bloodiest moments of war set his features in a grim mask of concentration and infrequent disgust. Battle lust seemed beyond him, or he had transcended its feverish joys. This was the result of sacrificing one's humanity for the good of the Imperium's people, and he would be repaid for his great sacrifice, repaid by the Emperor's assassins seeking his lifeblood.
Yes, Lord, Talos replied,
his mouth drying, his deep voice like a child's compared to the throaty rumble of his father's.
I have seen it. How did you know? I hear your dreams, the Primarch replied. We share a curse, you and I, the curse of foreknowledge. You are like me, Soul Hunter.
It didn't feel like an honor. Despite feeling no greater kinship with the Primarch than in that moment, there was no honor, just a sense of vulnerability that threatened to eclipse even his awe at standing in the shadow of his godlike gene sire. They would share words only once more before the Night Haunter greeted his death. And without it being spoken, Talos knew this too. What brought these thoughts flooding back to his mind now? The rush of instinct, the thrill of the hunt. Galvanized, Talos broke into a run. Eurydice's life rune pulsed on his retinas like the unstable ticking of a broken engine. She was wounded, that much was clear. Her implantation was crude and functional, revealing little of specifics. He heard Eurydice's muffled breathing, the heightened heartbeats of her captors, and exaggerated his footfalls so they would know he approached. Then, when he judged the moment right, when he could hear them whispering their fears to one another, the hunter ghosted into the shadows, turning his tread soft, standing in wait. One of the mortals walked past the Night Lord's hiding place between two man-sized capacitor cylinders, his skin reeking of grime and terror sweat. Talos resisted the urge to lick his lips.
"Greetings," he said in a low, smiling voice.
The shotgun bucked and blasted noise into the silence. The convict had fired his weapon in panic even before he turned. He had less than a heartbeat of looking into the blackness, seeing a pair of arched red eyes glaring before Talos was on him. His death was regrettably quick, and Talos mourned the chance to make it last. The corpse, its neck snapped, fell to the metal decking with a crumpling thud. The Night Lord was already gone.
Edson!
Someone called.
Edson! He's dead, said a voice behind him.
Myrick managed a breathless, wordless grunt of surprise before his head left his shoulders. Talos ignored the tumbling body, but caught the head before it fell. Gripping it by its lank, greasy hair, he moved on through the darkness. In his gauntleted fist, the head still twitched with facial ticks for several moments. The third to die was Sheevan. Sheevan had remained with the woman, standing over her with a power maul in his hands. Like most of the prisoners, he'd acquired the weapon from an enforcer guard in the riot. Unlike most of the prisoners, he was innocent of the crimes he'd been incarcerated for. Sheevan was no heretic. He was serving his sentence for ties to a deviant ruling cult from a world that had forsworn the dictate imperialis and broken from imperial rule. As a politician in the regime, he had been charged with heresy when the Imperium of Man came to take the world back from the grasp of the tainted rulers, despite the fact that it argued against secession from the throne. He found it bitterly ironic to be serving a life sentence for heresy when he'd spent a good 20 years in office, secretly indulging his true lusts and urges without any of his actions coming to the light. The blood of 5 women and 2 young men was on his hands. Sheevan regretted nothing. He didn't believe he had anything to regret. "Intriguer?" he called out. No answer. By his feet, the woman whisper laughed again. He thudded a boot into her side, feeling something, a rib or two maybe, snap under his kick. "Shut the hell up!" His ears itched. A buzzing, like a swarm of insects, was irritating his senses. "What the hell is that sound?" he muttered, clutching the maul tighter in his thin-fingered hands. It was the thrum of live Mark IV Astartes warplate. Talos emerged from the darkness ahead of him, illuminated only by the dim glow of Sheevern's personal lamp pack. "Catch," the Night Lord said. Despite the growl of his helm's vox speakers, he sounded almost amiable. On instinct, Sheevan caught what was thrown. He cradled it one-handed for a moment before dropping it with a gasp. His hand and arm were warm with blood. Mirik's head banged on the gantry floor. "Wait!" Sheevan begged the resolving shape. "I didn't touch her," he lied. Eurydice's bare foot hit the back of his knee as she lashed out in a furious kick. Sheevan stumbled, righting himself just in time to meet the Night Lord's bolter hitting his face. The muzzle of the oversized weapon hammered into his panting mouth, making shards of his teeth, the cold metal forcing its way to the back of his throat. He barely had time to squeal a muffled protest before the bolter bucked and sheared the chubby former politician's head clean off. Talos backhanded the headless body aside and stared down at Eurydice. She was battered and bruised, her clothing torn, one eye swollen shut. She still looked a lot better than Septimus had, though. Nothing here wouldn't heal, at least in regards to the physical damage she'd sustained. "We are leaving," said Talos.
"There's one more,"
she said faintly through slug-fat lips.
"The big one."
"We're still leaving," he said, reaching down for her.
With the navigator over his shoulder and his bolter clutched in his free hand, Talos made his way back through the generatorium chamber.
"This is Intriguer,"
the convict spoke into a hand vox. He crouched in the darkness under the foundation support girders of a silent generator tower, his words emerging as a sneering whisper. He wasn't made to hide. It took all of his willpower not to get out there and brain the armored monster that was making its escape.
"Speak," replied a sibilant male voice.
"Lord Reuven,"
the prisoner said.
"He came for the witch."
"This leads me to wonder, however, why you are still alive."
The words were stuck in Indriga's throat for several seconds.
"I hid, Lord."
"Has he gone?"
"He's leaving now."
A pause.
"He took the witch."
"What do you mean he took her? Why would he take a corpse?"
Indriga swallowed, and the sound travelled down the vox. Reuven growled a sigh.
"We brought her with us," Indriga said. "We wanted to."
"Enough. Your mortal urges are meaningless to me. You failed to comply with the most basic orders, Indriga. And now, you will die for it."
"Lord,
I would start running if I were you."
Indriga lowered the hand vox, his lip curling in disgust, as he heard the armored killer's footsteps drawing near again. Evidently, He was coming back to finish the job.
Must have heard me whispering.
Indriga needed to see. He clicked the shotgun's underslung lamp active and leapt from his hiding place with the beam of light like a lance before him. The towering armored form swiveled in the half-dark, no doubt protecting the witch he was carrying. Indriga's shotgun barked once, twice, a third time and a fourth, each impact blasting a hail of shot that cracked and clattered against the ceramite warplate. Talos turned in the second Indriga's shotgun clicked dry. Eurydice, over his left shoulder, had been shielded from harm when he'd spun to avoid the gunfire. The massive bolter fired once, aimed low, and the bolt pounded into Indriga's stomach. It detonated a moment later, leaving the convict in pieces across the walkway. The largest piece, consisting of Indriga's chest, arms, and howling face, remained alive for 12 agonizing seconds. Talos ignored its shrieks, reaching for the hand vox the dying prisoner had dropped.
"Prophet," said the voice on the other end of the channel.
"Reuven," Talos said softly. "My brother. It has been a while, brother. I should have recognized your unsubtle handiwork when your four gods babbled without sense for so long. Reuven of the Black Legion now, and eyes of the War Master. I assure you, Talos, you do not know of what you speak."
"The Exalted says the same. I am weary of the protests of the corrupt and the ruined. The War Master has betrayed the other legions before, but this is crude and brazen, even for him."
"So you say, brother. You have no proof beyond a cracked breastplate that he was even involved. And who would care? The Exalted? He is Abaddon's creature, and always has been. One squad of the Night Lords walking into an obvious trap is no concern for the coming crusade."
At Talos's feet, Indriga breathed his last. The silence was unwelcome, for the idiot's howls had been curiously pleasant.
"Your thuggish little cultist is dead," Talos said as he moved away.
"I will hardly be weeping over that. Tell me, why was it so easy to refuse the four powers? Did they offer nothing that tempted you, even for a moment?"
"The purpose of luring me to the planet's surface escapes me, brother," Talos said, looking down at the human wreckage. "You must have known I would never leave the Legion."
"The Eighth Legion is weak. The Exalted seeks to discard you. You have little love for your brothers. And above all, Abaddon himself takes an interest in you. Does that mean nothing to you? How can this be so?"
Talos was already moving, cradling Eurydice as he walked.
"I am going to kill you when next I see you, Reuven."
The Night Lord had foreseen the Navigator's importance, and almost lost her only days later. This foolish venture had also almost cost him Septimus. Might yet still cost him Septimus if he didn't survive the restorative surgeries. Carelessness. Carelessness beyond reckoning.
"Mark my words, Reuven. Whether you are the Despoiler's pet or not, I will cut you down."
"Why did you refuse the powers? Answer me, Talos."
"Because I am my father's son."
Talos cast the handbox aside and kept walking.
"It was good to speak with you again, my brother. I missed your simple sincerity and literal nature. Talos! Talos!
Talos felt Eurydice stir as he ascended the stairs to the next level.
Thank you,
she said softly. He had no answer to that. The words were too unfamiliar.